Walter's Tale of the Summer Islands. Keeps powder dry and memory smoky. While Hobbes's Leviathan places sovereignty on the deck and calls it necessary. Holy war and paradise. Lost wire the quarterdeck for apocalypse and angelic logistics. Fuller's profane and holy state offers portraits honest enough to live beside a rope maker's hands. Dryden teaches the city how to count its fires. Edge of Spitsberg and Herbert's Asia and Africa shout in circumnavigation. And every Greenland that must be approached as if it were a sentence. They all furnish ways to stand at a rail and distinguish chance from current. Sibbald's Fife and Kinross pushes the land forward to meet the sea and proves that coasts are already negotiations. The Bermuda's letter stiffens your back against humidity and misrule, while the New England primer raises the stern alphabet that will be needed when whales begin to make their case. Captain Cowley, Ulu, and Cook bring maps that never quite stand still. Uno von Troil hands you Aurora in a pocket diary. Jefferson writes his whale memorial as if light were a constitutional promise. And he is right. Burke corrects your awe with proportion. Blackstone trims your enthusiasm for righteous storms with the simply stated claim that roofs are law. Which is to say, Mercy Falconer keeps the deck from drowning in adjectives. Cowper returns you to the room where patience survives fashion. John Hunter shows anatomy. As in Ethics for Hands, Paley insists that hinges are sermons. If properly heard, Kavir gives fossils a tone so firm you suspect they are still living. Conant teaches how a season learns to be lawful. Montgomery supplies antediluvian imagination, a courier between flood and conjecture. Lamb puts a crown on the beast and slyly questions the court that offers it. Macy writes a single island until it becomes a world. Hawthorne makes piety translucent. Cooper teaches the wheel to whisper. Thicke's Goffin discovers that conversaton that offers it. Ensie rents a single island until it becomes a world. Hawthorne makes piety translucent. Cooper teaches the wheel to whisper upper. Thicke's Goffin discovers that conversation can be a climate. Owen Chase enters with hunger that does not complain, and therefore becomes scripture. Elizabeth Oak Smith watches scores by Judge Ice with a pencil. Beale replaces superstition with method and refuses to blink. Bennett makes a republic of tools. Brown draws men in ink that remembers laughter. Lay and Hussey and Tireman and Bennett set presses humming in lagoons where the alphabet becomes a civic water. Daniel Webster speaks as if the tide respected cadence. Cheever exhorts with a voice that smells of rope and moral vinegar. Comstock counts cask in a shop that learned justice by weight. McCulloch corrals commerce into definitions that feel like doors. Currents and whaling teaches that arrows on maps are promises kept by water. The Arctic Voyager confesses patience to the flow. The Hobo Mock account demonstrates that a ship can be taken and retaken without losing its posture. Cruise on a whaleboat gives the close work every myth requires. Miriam Coffin arranges a town to the meter of rain. Ribs and Trucks instructs you in how curves survive pressure. Darwin introduces time that edits with kindness. Wharton insists on price and silence. Nantucket sings only what it can keep. Whale song reveals pressure as music. Now return to the novel and notice what is the whalemen are not aesthetics. Their bodies burn. They remember the particular softness of a neck, the ecstatic whimper of a breast, dark nipple after a winter bath. The courage living there in such atrocious agonies. In their pockets are notes that would embarrass a preacher. On their tongues are women who stand like peers in their lives. These women arrive at the Spouter Inn without names, steady the landlord's wife by a nod. Unnerve Ishmael because tenderness is better discipline than fear. They're in the sermon too, in the breath of widows who find their dead useful, placing them in prayers with the precision of a cooper. They're in the squeeze of the hand because erotic labor moves through pulp and laughter until disgust dissolves in a common warmth remains. Why treat arrows as a whiteness rather than a firework? Because the book does not announce, it insinuates. Because the famous whiteness does double duty, it terrifies when it erases boundaries at sea, then returns to town as clarity, as legible rooms, as time for the body, that is arrows, not merely appetite, but a light by which care can see. When the chase ends with loss in a world that refuses funerals, arrows still circulates in the lamps the whale paid for, in the children who continue their alphabet, in the women who set bread and do not apologize for grace that is practical.